like you to be mindful of. And to introduce the next speaker is coming Mon Cochran, who's the executive director of the Cape Cod Climate Change Collaborative.
Thank you, Janet. The Cape Cod Climate Change Collaborative is just about 3 years old. And from the very beginning, environmental justice has been high on our agenda. We wanted to make sure that in our eagerness and enthusiasm for moving concrete actions forward, we didn't lose sight of the importance of social justice. And I think that was actually quite apparent in the various presentations that we've had today. I was just delighted to have Eugenia and Maggie and Heather underscoring that, I think, very important aspect of this work. Early in our development 3 years ago, Susan Starkey came forward as a volunteer. She started in her own Unitarian church in Barnstable, chairing the Green Sanctuaries Committee. But then she came to our nascent organization and offered her assistance. And it became very clear to us early on that the faith communities on the Cape were really ready to take on this challenge. And so along with Paul Minas, Susan has played a major role in building a faith communities network. So we're just thrilled to have her with us today. And in her day job, she's a leadership coach for young people nationwide. But the rest of the time, which is a lot of the time, she has been concentrating on this issue. So please welcome Susan Starkey.
Thank you, Mon, and thank you, everyone. You're my heroes to be sitting and listening all of this time this morning. So I'm thinking of my 8-year-old twin grandchildren that would say, "You people are nuts. Stand up." And so I'm going to ask you to stand up, stretch. Please take a big, deep breath, maybe even take a circle around your chair and just move a little bit. As Greta Thunberg said, children have to act like adults because adults are acting like children. But in this room, adults are acting like such adults. We're being so good. So go ahead and have a seat. Keep stretching. Yawn a little bit if you need to. This has been an amazing amount of information to take in. The other question I want to ask you right now is just, after all we've heard today, how is your heart? I know mine is inspired, and yet it's heavy and tired because there is so much that this means to us. And there is so much that's already been said about marginalized people. I really don't need to say more about how important it is to support marginalized people, but the really big thing is we are all marginalized. I mean, our species is at risk, and it is really a heavy responsibility to carry the fact that we are at a choice about which other species go extinct. So it is a lot for my heart to take in. I'm sure it is yours as well. There are a number of other faith communities, environmental network folks here. Could I just ask you to stand if you're a member of my network? Thank you. Thank you all. Each of these folks could speak to you on the same subject today, and none of us would say exactly the same thing. We're a network, not an organization, and there is not one moral imperative to call us to action around. So what I can speak to you today from my point of view to invite us all into a deeper awareness and of our own call, because something has you sitting here all day, showing up here all day, because you care about something so greatly, and that is your moral imperative, and that's much more important than any thing that I or anyone else can say. But that said, I still have a few things to say to you. And let me just make sure I don't say too much. My own story is that I came here 4.5 years ago from Colorado, lived 35 years there, and before that was in Detroit, but came here with that feeling of, wow, I'm going to have a front stage seat to climate change. So I was in the mountains, inside of a canyon, you know, but we had fire and all kinds, and drought and lots of difficult things there. But I knew I was coming to have a front seat here, and so I've been real active since I got here, and I know all of you have too. So I want to thank you for all that you're doing. We are making a difference, as Nate was really saying, and almost everybody has said, we make a huge difference here. Now, in terms of moral imperative, probably the best leader we have from an interfaith perspective, not just a Catholic one, which is where I started from, but is our Pope with his encyclical of 2015. So if any one of us has not read that yet or even studied it, it's a great thing to have a group around. But one of the things that he says is that we need to learn a new way of dwelling in our common home and manage it more responsibly through a new economics and a new political culture. So that is a heavy lift, and it is why I think I'm here to talk to you today. I feel like I'm here to talk truth to power, and the power I'm talking to is you. Because if we're going to have a new economy, it can't quite be just more electricity, more usage, more. We're pretty committed to that. We think we can handle it. And yet, if you get all the emails that I get every day, you know we actually have to do less. When I talk to my neighbors and they say, oh, but I want to recycle, and now the town isn't collecting everything anymore. This is horrible. I used to have 2 big bins of recycling every single week and only 1 of garbage. But, you know, going, where does the recycling go now that it's not going to China? We can't just keep on buying, using, consuming, and throwing things away and expecting that we can just solve it with another technological solution. So the call to action from the Pope's encyclical is something to really take in. That said, I do think there's a lot that we can unite on as a human species. You know, so we're not only a consumeristic, you know, destructive force, although that's what it feels like some days. We do have, I mean, there's study after study that has shown that we actually do have an aspiration to be a force for good in the world. And this goes back to the previous conversation where we are not, this does not need to be political. We all want good for the world. We all want to have a meaningful life. We do have values of altruism and cooperation and compassion and care for others. So let's not be so certain that whatever political side we're on is the right side and the other is the wrong, but look for the way to find commonality throughout. I believe that we need to have a stronger commitment and a shared vision of where we're going. But I wasn't invited exactly to talk about the shared vision. It was more the moral imperative. But I want to put out this question of, is it a moral obligation that drives you? Are you here because you feel impelled to meet the moral challenge? Or are you here because you do feel some call to some way to be loving and caring and compassionate? I mean, this is a very interesting conversation that we have at the Faith Communities Environmental Network. And, you know, I guess it's both. For me, I'm pretty rebellious, so I'm not too into obligation. Sorry. I'm more into the vision side, but some of you might be exactly the opposite of that. I think that on the imperative side or the obligation side, we really do have a strong commitment, as I've heard today, to making sure that we bring in the voices of marginalized and underserved. And that's not only from an altruistic perspective, but it's also because we're so interconnected that when we leave, when we dispose of certain populations, when we say along with the trash, we can also leave out the people on that side of 28 or, you know, that side of the bridge or whatever, we're cutting off our own nose to spite our face. So it is really important that we have that moral imperative to manage and involve the marginalized and underserved. But what about also having a vision of what it really looks like to have a thriving, flourishing world with 9 billion people in it? You know, what will that really look like? I wake up at night and wonder about that, and I think that we need to have more conversations within this collaborative about that. So not everybody used to be comfortable with the word love in these kind of conversations, but I think we're getting more comfortable with that, that it is a lot of love and compassion that drives us, and I hope that that's what brings us forward from today, is really having that sense of how is my heart and how am I called forward. Now, this is a shift that we're going through to be able to not just have more, but to actually change. And I think that the way that we will get there is by doing less of some things and more of others. And I know people, you know, there's two arguments here. One is to say we have to do it step by step. That's where I started 4 years ago. And then there's the other argument that says it's too gradual. We need massive transformation right now. It's like, but people don't change like on a dime. Well, but do they? Maybe they do. So you can go back and forth. So I think if we look at it from what do we need to do less of, we need to be just less neutral observers. We need to stop just being unconscious consumers who just are saying, well, I got to retire on the Cape or semi-retire on the Cape. I deserve to have, you know, to go to the beach every day if I want to. It's like, yeah? Tell that to the people in the Bahamas right now. I think we need to do less of being so loving to our own kids that we think that they're ours, and then we don't have time to do anything else. So we have to really take a hard look at some of those things. What do we need to do more of? We've talked about it all day long. Be a citizen. And that doesn't mean just voting. 8 years ago, we thought that meant just voting and then leaving it all to the president to do whatever he was going to do. And that worked then, but not now, in my opinion. We need to be conscious consumers. We've got to vote with our pocketbook. We have so much power. We could talk to vendors, for example, and say, don't give us boxed lunches, just put sandwiches on the table and we can pick it up. We don't need all this packaging. You know, there's a lot that we can do. And then let's be creative ancestors. That is a really inspiring thing to me, to think of how do we care for the seventh generation right now when we're afraid that there might not be another one or two. In fact, speaking of marginalized people, as Dylan had told us earlier, it's like everyone who's a millennial, let alone a Generation Z, and that's a new term to me today, I'm glad to hear it, that's a marginalized group we have to care a lot about. You know, when you don't even know if you should have kids or not, that's not where we want to be. So there is a lot that we can do individually, and some of that means gradually. Can't change everything at once, can't feel guilty about absolutely everything, as Dan said earlier. On the other hand, collectively, the individual action is not enough. We need radical change. We need Green New Deal. We need to foster totally new ways of being in the world. And in fact, I think we need to foster diversity, but not divisiveness. And I think this is a challenge, too, for this group, that what are we doing when we start to say, well, this group isn't doing enough, or these people could do better? What if we really look at ourselves and say, do I need anybody telling me how much I haven't done enough of? It's like, I haven't done enough of a lot of things. I haven't even woken up completely, let alone acted on everything I could. So I really, if there was anything on my soapbox that I really want to say is like, let's watch out for the blame and guilt tripping that we inadvertently do because we're so passionate. So anyways, that shift is something we can do without having as individuals and then collectively, you know, all together. And we need to understand that younger people will have a lot more echo anxiety than we might, even though we're probably feeling pretty anxious, at least I am, and I know everybody else is, but younger people are feeling really anxious. I went 4 years ago from running a group at my church that is our faith community that was on the book Act of Hope by Joanna Macy, and we were able to talk about living with gratitude, you know, honoring our pain for the world, seeing with new eyes, and taking action from there. So that was 2015, and that was tough, but it still was really good. This year, I just finished a 10-week course called Good Grief. And it's taught by two young women, and you can find it online, goodgrief.org, I think it is. But it's a program kind of like AA, where it's 10 steps instead of 12, where we face our addiction as consumers and as asleep people who don't want to face up to reality. So that's kind of the transition I've gone through, and I think we're all going through. So you're powerful people, and there's a lot that you can do, and change is something that we don't necessarily know how to make. This is a kind of change that we've never had before. And I loved it when, Dan, was it you that, you know, it said, what are we going to do differently than we ever have done before? Because all of our other changes, whether it's women's rights or racial justice, have taken too long and have slid too far back, and we can't afford to do that. So I, as a leadership coach and a behavior change specialist, I think we've got a lot to learn. I don't think, on myself, I think we have to talk about, did the war on drugs work? You know, is that where we want to go? Do we need to step into love and compassion? And from a faith community's perspective, we'd love to talk to you about those kinds of things. There's a site up here that if you want to look at what kind of gift is yours to offer, the Story of Stuff has a little test that you can take. That's fantastic. And we need all of us in the room. We need people who want to move towards radical change. We need people who want to move against something that's we must oppose. We need people who can slip and slide and do Tai Chi between things and make strategic action happen. So if you're in this room, we need you, and we need your diversity and your style of being in the world. To continue this conversation, I would really like to invite you to an October 26th Faith and Science Forum. There are handouts at the back at the APCC table that are, this is going to be a game changer. Please come and bring at least one person with you. On faith and science, we've got to match the data with the things that I'm talking about with faith and with developing our consciousness as well as our conscience. So please pick up one of those and come to that. And lastly, this wonderful logo that was created for that forum, I think is going to become the Faith Communities Environmental Network logo. Because here we are, place matters. We care about the Cape and Islands. We care about Massachusetts. But it's also because it matters what we do for the planet. I don't let anybody tell me that the planet's going to survive just fine without us, but she might kick us off the face of it. I think she's hurting a lot, and we need to all care enough to partner together. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Those are great words to keep in mind as we go to the next task at hand today. Couple of items I want to call to your attention before I turn you over to your work, and you get to give your input. Hopefully you have been inspired and motivated and are ready to take on the task of understanding what you're going to do, what actions we're going to take. So you've each been assigned, not necessarily arbitrarily, because we asked you, and if you expressed a preference, we tried to honor that, to a particular sector. In your green folders, you'll find a legal-sized piece of paper that's been folded, and that contains the actions that particular sector will be